Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into Islam, A Short History by Karen Armstrong. This insightful text provides a riveting exploration of Islam's development from a small religious sect in 7th century Arabia to its status today as one of the world's largest religions, boasting nearly 2 billion adherents. Armstrong highlights Islam's unique approach to justice and societal perfection, offering a fresh perspective on its historical context and evolution over 1,500 years. Karen Armstrong, an esteemed scholar in the field of religious studies, brings her extensive knowledge and experience to the book. Having spent 7 years as a Catholic nun before transitioning to a renowned writer on world religions, her works include best-selling titles such as A History of God and Jerusalem, The Battle for God. Islam, A Short History is a must-read for anyone interested in the dynamics of history and politics, as well as believers and non-believers seeking to gain a deeper understanding of Islam beyond common media portrayals. Join us in uncovering the compelling story of a faith that continues to shape the world in significant ways. Islam, A Short History. Introduction. Explore the rich tapestry of Islam. From its origins to its place in the modern world, tracing its roots back to the 7th century in Arabia, Islam today stands as one of the world's major religions, boasting nearly 2 billion adherents. It started as a burgeoning movement under the leadership of the Prophet Muhammad, aiming to challenge social injustice, and rapidly evolved into a formidable empire stretching across 3 continents. However, its journey through the centuries has been anything but straightforward. Presently, the Islamic civilization presents a complex and often paradoxical picture, fraught with misconceptions and simplistic stereotypes. Think of the common images propagated through media, oppressive towards women, associated with terrorism, or autocratic governance. These are but superficial sketches that fail to capture the essence of a rich and diverse faith. For centuries, views on Islam have been colored by fear and misunderstanding, especially from a Western perspective. Historical interactions such as the Crusades have only cemented a view of Islam that oscillates between disdain and fear. It's time to challenge these clichés. In our exploration, you'll discover how Muhammad's revolutionary message delivered hope and guidance to a society grappling with deep spiritual voids, the profound impacts of Western transformation on Islamic societies, particularly during the colonial and post-colonial eras, the true nature of fundamentalism within Islam, which, contrary to popular belief, is not as rigid or conservative as often perceived. Join us as we delve into the illustrious journey of Islam, understanding its foundational beliefs, historical challenges, and the relentless pursuit of a just society by its followers. This narrative seeks not just to educate, but to bridge the vast chasms of understanding, bringing to light the true spirit of Islam. Part 1: Understanding Islam's Commitment to Justice in the Earthly Realm. Religion often presents a dualistic nature, the pursuit of spirituality and transcendence, alongside a complex interaction with worldly power dynamics. Most faiths strive to reconcile the quest for sacred purity with the inevitability of political engagement. But Islam, in particular, takes a distinctive approach in this interplay. Many religions, like Hinduism, view historical events as trivial in comparison to the eternal verities of their doctrines. Christianity similarly emphasizes a spiritual kingdom of personal salvation, as reflected in Jesus' teachings about the kingdom of God being not of this world but a metaphor for a higher spiritual state. Enlightenment philosophy further echoed this sentiment by advocating for a separation between church and state, not to exclude religion from public life, but to shield it from the corruptions of political disputes, emphasizing religion as a deeply personal affair. However, each religion is undeniably shaped by the circumstances of its era, often emerging as a response to perceived injustices of the time. This concept, which the author describes as earthing, suggests that true transcendence involves recognizing the divine within the physical world. In many religious traditions, this is facilitated through sacred objects and symbols like rocks, temples, and holy texts, which serve as conduits to the divine. Islam, however, stands out by eschewing religious icons. Instead, it places profound emphasis on actions. The deeds performed by Muslims in the material world are the central symbols through which they engage with the divine. This gives Islam a uniquely active and political character. The religion's core objective is not merely the salvation of the individual, but the establishment of a just society here and now. Political actions, therefore, are not seen as mere means to an end, but as sacred activities that bring spiritual grace. Thus, in Islam, the internal essence and external actions are deeply intertwined. Understanding Islam requires not just a look at its spiritual teachings, but also a thorough consideration of its historical actions and political engagements. In the chapters that follow, we delve into how these dynamics have shaped the faith, exploring the intricate ways in which Islam continually strives to manifest divine justice in the everyday world. Part 2: Muhammad's Teachings, a Beacon of Hope During Spiritual Turmoil in Ancient Arabia. In the year 570 CE, amidst the bustling trade routes of Mecca, a boy named Muhammad was born into the influential Quraysh tribe. His life took a transformative turn at the age of 40 during his customary retreats to the mountains to pray and fast during Ramadan. It was here, in 610 CE, amid the solitude of the mountains, that Muhammad experienced a profound spiritual awakening. A commanding presence roused him from sleep, and he found himself speaking words that formed the beginnings of a new scripture destined to guide an entire society. This revelation came at a critical time. The success of the Quraysh in commerce had brought great wealth, but at the expense of communal values. Social justice and care for the downtrodden, once pillars of Arab society, were now overshadowed by a burgeoning merchant elite who prioritized wealth accumulation. This shift created a moral and spiritual vacuum that left many pondering their place under God's gaze. Amidst this societal shift, a religious yearning persisted. The Arabs, aware of the monotheistic traditions of the Christians and Jews, recognized their chief deity, Allah, as the same God, but lamented the absence of a messenger for their people. They speculated whether their continual strife was a sign of divine abandonment. When Muhammad began sharing his visions, initially only with his wife Khadija, and later with a close circle that included her Christian cousin, they recognized the divine nature of his messages. These early revelations, which he began to publicly proclaim by 612 CE, were a call to the Quraysh to abandon their arrogance and rediscovery of humility, compassion, and piety. The core of his teachings warned of divine retribution unless there was a return to these forsaken virtues. Muhammad's words, compiled into the Quran, which literally means recitations, outlined a clear path: abandon the pursuit of personal wealth at the expense of just community life, embrace humility before God, and treat one another with the respect and kindness befitting of beings created by a just and merciful Lord. These principles were not just spiritual, but practically applied through rituals. Early followers engaged in acts like zakat, charity designed to redistribute wealth, fasting during Ramadan to cultivate empathy for the impoverished, and practicing salat, prayers that reinforced humility. Muhammad's forthright approach in addressing the spiritual maladies of his time initially attracted only a modest following. His message, however, laid the cornerstone for a movement that would challenge and eventually transform Arabian society. This spiritual revolution was met with resistance, as we shall explore, particularly from those whose power was threatened by this call for justice and equality. Part 3: The Growing Pains of Islam Under the Scrutiny of Meccan Authorities. As Muhammad's teachings began to resonate more deeply within the hearts of approximately 70 families in Mecca, the initial indifference from the city's authorities shifted dramatically towards hostility. Until around 616, Islam was merely a minor sect in the eyes of Mecca's ruling class, with Muhammad dismissed as an insignificant figure posing as a prophet. However, the tide turned as the socio-political implications of Muhammad's teachings became apparent. The burgeoning conflict had both theological and political roots. Islam's monotheistic leanings aligned more closely with the traditions of Christians and Jews, rather than the predominantly pagan beliefs of the Meccan leadership. This alignment was symbolized by Muslims praying towards Jerusalem. Additionally, the Islamic belief in a last judgment posed a direct challenge to the Meccan elite, suggesting a future where their prevailing greed and neglect of the poor would lead to divine condemnation. Muhammad's position further exacerbated tensions. Despite his claims of being merely a nadir, a warner with no political aspirations, many among Mecca's elite suspected that his growing influence over the city's marginalized groups cloaked more ambitious political intentions. The hostility crystallized in the actions of Abu al-Hakam, a prominent advisor within the Quraysh leadership known for his opposition to Islam. Under his influence, the elite initiated a severe boycott against all Muslim converts. This embargo included bans on marriage and trade, and even extended to basic necessities like food. This harsh strategy plunged many Muslim families into financial despair and was directly linked to significant hardships, including the death of Muhammad's wife, Khadija. The physical abuse of enslaved Muslim converts left to suffer in the harsh desert conditions highlighted the brutal attempts to suppress the new faith. The death of Muhammad's protector, his uncle Abu Talib, in 619, intensified the peril for Muhammad and his followers. In tribal Arab society, the absence of a wali, or protector, left one vulnerable to assassination without consequence for the attacker. At this critical juncture, the fate of Islam seemed uncertain. However, relief came unexpectedly when leaders from Yathrib, a city later known as Medina, reached out with a proposition that promised a new direction for Muhammad and his followers. This pact would not only offer them sanctuary, but would also set the stage for one of the most pivotal moments in the history of Islam. Part 4: The Foundation of an Islamic State, Muhammad's Strategic Moves in Medina. In a pivotal moment that would define the trajectory of Islam, Muhammad and his followers embarked on the Hijra, a migration from Mecca to Yathrib, 250 miles to the north. This migration marked the dawn of the Islamic calendar in 622 CE. Yathrib, soon to be renamed Medina, meaning the city, was plagued by tribal conflicts and desperately sought a leader who could adjudicate disputes impartially. Muhammad was chosen for this role, signifying a turning point not only for him and his followers, but also for the host city. This shift to Medina was transformative. Traditionally, Arabian societies were structured around kinship ties, but the new Islamic community, or Ummah, was ideologically based, emphasizing shared faith over blood relations. In Medina, Muhammad crafted a constitution that was revolutionary for its time, insisting on mutual respect and cooperation among all community members, regardless of their religious affiliations. While Medina's constitution created a broad framework of cooperation, the city itself was still a patchwork of beliefs. Muslims, though central figures in this evolving society, lived alongside Jews and pagans under the promise of mutual non-aggression. This delicate balance was, however, continually tested. Economic pressures brewed as alliances with non-Muslim Medinans strained under the resource demands of a growing Muslim community. To sustain themselves, Muslims revived the old Arabian practice of ghazu, raiding caravans, focusing particularly on those belonging to the Meccan Quraysh, their richest and most formidable foes. This strategy escalated to a critical confrontation in March 624, when Muhammad intercepted Mecca's largest caravan, prompting the Battle of Badr, where, against the odds, his numerically inferior force claimed a miraculous victory. Despite a setback at the Battle of Uhud in 625, the Muslims' resilience and strategic prowess were on full display by 627 during the Battle of the Trench, where they triumphed over a significantly larger Meccan force. These victories not only consolidated Muhammad's leadership, but also began attracting the Bedouin tribes, impressed by what they saw as divine favor. By 630, Muhammad's strengthened force was ready to retake Mecca. The Quraysh, recognizing the inevitable, surrendered without major resistance. Muhammad's entry into Mecca was transformative. He immediately set about purifying the Kaaba of its pagan idols, rededicating it to the worship of Allah alone. The unification of Medina under a novel, ideologically driven community model, and the successful reclamation of Mecca were monumental. They not only cemented Muhammad's status as a skilled leader, but also set the stage for the rapid spread of Islam across the Arabian Peninsula, ultimately establishing a new socio-political order rooted in the principles of mutual respect and justice. This network of alliances, underpinned by shared Islamic values, paved the way for an enduring peace among the diverse tribes of Arabia. Part 5. Expansion and Governance. The Muslim Empire's Rise Post-Muhammad. Following the death of Muhammad in 632, the nascent Muslim community faced a monumental challenge: the transition from a divinely guided prophet to mortal rulers. The Rashidun Caliphs sparked uncertainties about leadership legitimacy and the cohesion of the Islamic State. Abu Bakr, the first caliph, immediately encountered resistance from Arabian tribes who contested the binding nature of their non-aggression pacts post-Muhammad's demise. His decisive victory in the Ridar Wars, also known as the Apostasy Wars, reasserted unity, but the underlying issues of tribal loyalty and resource allocation persisted. Successive caliphs, Umar, 632, 644, and Uthman, 644, 656, sought a sustainable model to maintain unity and manage scarce resources. Their solution extended beyond Arabian borders, initiating policies of raiding non-Muslim territories. This strategy led to astonishing territorial gains, stretching the empire from present-day Libya to Afghanistan by 656, including the significant conquest of the Persian Empire. Contrary to the popular narrative of Islam as a religion of the sword, these expansions were more pragmatic than theological. The intention was not to forcibly convert, but to stabilize and extend governance. The Islamic rulers adopted a system where Muslim Arabs, the ruling minority, lived in segregated garrison towns, minimizing direct contact with the non-Muslim majorities in the regions they controlled. The new Muslim rulers introduced the concept of dhimma, protected persons, for Jews and Christians, groups recognized as people of the book. Under this policy, as long as these communities paid a jizya or poll tax, they enjoyed religious freedom and protection under Muslim rule. This pragmatic approach to governance unexpectedly garnered a preference among some Christian communities over their previous Byzantine rulers, who had often persecuted them over doctrinal disputes. The reliance on the expertise of dhimma, many of whom were experienced administrators from Byzantine times, was crucial for the Muslims, who were relatively inexperienced in empire management. This integration allowed non-Muslims significant mobility within the social and administrative hierarchies of the empire, illustrating an early form of religious tolerance and pragmatism that facilitated the empire's administration and growth. This period underscored a complex blend of conquest and coexistence, setting foundational governance practices that would influence Islamic rule in the vast territories under its control. Part 6. The Birth of Sharia, a Counteraction to Dynastic Dominance and Imperial Priorities. Following the era of the rightly guided caliphs, the Islamic Empire experienced a shift in governance with the rise of the Umayyad, 661, 750, and Abbasid, 750, 1258 caliphates. These dynasties faced the colossal task of managing an expansive empire while striving to stay true to the foundational values of Islam. This balancing act proved increasingly difficult as the centralized power essential for ruling an empire clashed with the egalitarian principles pronounced in the Quran and the traditional Arab skepticism towards monarchic authority. The shift towards a monarchical system under the Umayyads intensified these tensions. The appointment of Muawiyah's son Yazid as his successor marked a decisive break from the expected caliphal succession, which many believe should be determined by one's proximity to the Prophet Muhammad, not by dynastic inheritance. This deviation sparked significant opposition, culminating in the tragic massacre of Muhammad's grandson Hussein and his followers, which underscored the growing divide between imperial ambitions and religious ideals. Economic policies further complicated the adherence to Islamic principles. While leaders like Umar II, known for his devout stance, attempted to prioritize Islamic values, their policies sometimes led to financial strain. The encouragement of converting non-Muslims to Islam, while spiritually rewarding, reduced the flow of jizya, poll tax, which had been a major source of revenue for the empire under previous rulers noted for their more pragmatic, less pious approaches. In response to these perceived dilutions of Islamic authenticity, a significant movement towards codifying Islamic law, or Sharia, emerged. The ulama, a growing body of Islamic scholars, began to systematize the religious teachings to ensure they were preserved and correctly understood, especially by the empire's increasingly diverse population. Works like The Beaten Path by Malik ibn Anas exemplified efforts to consolidate a comprehensive guide to living a life aligned with the teachings and practices of Muhammad. These scholars viewed the Sharia not just as religious directives, but as a political framework that could counterbalance the excesses of imperial rule. They pushed for a model of governance that limited the powers of rulers and emphasized the prophetic traditions advocating for social justice and equity. This move was not merely about religious law, but represented a broader demand for reform and a return to the ideals perceived to be at the heart of the Islamic ethos. Thus, the development of Sharia became a pivotal countercultural force during a time when the political actions of the Islamic Empire seemed increasingly at odds with its religious roots, reflecting a yearning for a return to the principles laid down by Muhammad and the early community of believers. Part 7. The Dawn of a Golden Era: Islam's Flourishing in a Decentralized Landscape. By the 10th century, the vast Islamic empire was facing an undeniable reality. The centralized governance model was no longer sustainable. The role of the caliph persisted, though it had largely become ceremonial. As the empire fragmented into various regions, fears mounted about the potential decline of Islam. Contrary to these worries, however, this period marked the onset of a golden age for the Islamic world. With the dissolution of a central authority, power was redistributed to local rulers, who established their own sovereign states and dynasties. This shift proved to be a catalyst for cultural and intellectual renewal. Notable among these new seats of power were the Samanids in Iran from 874 to 999, the rulers of Al-Andalus in Spain until 1085, and the Fatimids in Cairo, who held sway from 909 until 1171. Each of these regions became vibrant centers of scholarship and artistic endeavor. The decentralization fostered an environment where education and intellectual pursuit flourished independently of the state. In Fatimid Cairo, the foundations were laid for what would become Al-Azhar University, an institution that remains a pinnacle of Islamic learning today. Similarly, Samanid Bukhara became a hub of intellectual activity, attracting scholars such as Ibn Sina, known in the West as Avicenna, whose contributions to philosophy, medicine, and the sciences were monumental. This fragmentation also led to significant changes in how the Islamic community viewed itself. As the influence of local dynasties was primarily confined to political and military domains, the task of religious and moral guidance fell to the independent ulama. This group of scholarly figures began establishing madrasas, or schools dedicated to Islamic sciences, thereby shaping a distinctive Islamic educational tradition. Among the scholars of this era, Al-Ghazali stands out. His advocacy for a less ritualistic and more spiritually profound practice of Islam resonated across the Muslim world, carried from one learning center to another. These ideas, and the scholars who championed them, became the cohesive force binding the dispersed Muslim communities. This era of intellectual and spiritual prosperity redefined Muslim identity. More than ever, Muslims saw themselves as part of a vast Dar al-Islam, a transnational house of Islam that transcended political borders and unified believers across diverse cultural landscapes. This new sense of belonging did not hinge on allegiance to any singular empire or state, but was anchored in a shared faith and scholarly pursuit that crossed regional boundaries. Part 8: Colonial Domination, the Western Impact on the Islamic World in the Modern Era. Historically, Islamic regions were powerhouses of culture, innovation, and learning, dominating the landscape of medieval achievements across art and science. Arabic was the lingua franca of intellectual discourse, spanning continents and influencing myriad cultures. Conversely, Europe lagged behind, embroiled in relative stasis, until the Renaissance sparked a gradual catch-up during the 13th century. By the 18th century, Europe not only caught up, but had advanced to a position of global dominance. The catalyst for Europe's dramatic rise was multifaceted, involving revolutionary changes in social structures, technological innovations, and capital investments that enabled sustainable economic growth. This surge in productivity introduced an age of unprecedented innovation, reshaping European societies fundamentally. The philosophical shift towards progress, with a focus on future possibilities rather than traditional legacies, laid the groundwork for the capitalist system, necessitating an educated populace and a consumer-driven economy. As literacy and economic agency spread, a push for democratization followed, further eroding the traditional religious and social structures in favor of secular governance and societal efficiency. However, this transformative era in Europe was not confined to its borders. It had expansive global implications, particularly for the Islamic world. The expansionist drive inherent in modern capitalist societies led inevitably to colonialism. European powers, driven by the necessity to access and control overseas markets and resources, began to systematically colonize and exert control over vast areas of the Islamic world. This period marked a significant upheaval for these regions as local economies and traditional ways of life were disrupted or dismantled to serve European interests. India, an emblematic case, saw the decline of the Mughal Empire and the rise of British dominance following the economic exploitation of Bengal in the 1790s. Similarly, the French conquest of Egypt in 1798 set the stage for further territorial acquisitions by European powers across North Africa and the Middle East, including Algeria, Tunisia, Sudan, Libya, and Morocco. By the early 20th century, the map of the Islamic world had been redrawn, with most regions either under direct European control or heavily influenced by foreign powers. This era of Western ascendancy brought profound changes, integrating the Islamic world into a global system dominated by European economic and political norms, and reshaping local cultures, economies, and governance structures irrevocably. Part 9: Navigating Modern Challenges, Islam's Complex Relationship with Contemporary Developments. The colonization of Muslim lands by European powers not only disrupted traditional societal structures and customs, but also deeply affected the Islamic sense of identity and governance. The experience was markedly traumatic, leaving a lasting impact on the region's approach to modernization and the integration of Islamic principles with contemporary political systems. The conundrum faced by the Muslim world was profound. The Quran advocates that a society living in accordance with God's will is destined to prosper. Yet the observable decline in many Muslim regions during colonization suggested otherwise. This led to introspection and a fervent discourse on the need for modernization. The strategy that emerged in uncolonized or newly independent Muslim-majority states involved a rapid and often forceful adoption of Western practices and technologies, Leaders such as Muhammad Ali in Ottoman Egypt spearheaded drastic reforms that not only modernized the military and infrastructure, but also secularized many aspects of governance, often at the expense of religious institutions and authorities. This pattern continued into the 20th century with figures like Ataturk in Turkey and Reza Shah in Iran, who pursued aggressive secularization policies in an attempt to reforge their nations under modern secular nationalist frameworks. However, these top-down modernization efforts frequently face significant challenges. The fundamental Islamic belief in the inseparability of religion from public life clashed with the secular paradigms these leaders tried to implement. Moreover, many of these modernization initiatives did not result in the desired outcomes, leading to widespread frustration and disillusionment among the populace. Critics of these modernizing efforts, such as Jamal al-Din, argued that simply copying Western models was futile. Western societies had developed their unique cultural and political frameworks over centuries, drawing heavily on their historical and ideological backgrounds. If Muslim societies wished to truly modernize, they would need to forge a path that was authentically Islamic, reflecting their own traditions and values while embracing beneficial contemporary practices. This discourse extended into broader political concepts like democracy and nationalism. While not inherently antithetical to Islamic principles, as the election of the rightly guided caliphs demonstrates, the Western conception of democracy raises theological questions about the sovereignty of God versus the sovereignty of the people. Moreover, the imposition of nationalism and the creation of new national identities were complicated by the colonial legacy of arbitrary borders and the diverse multi-religious demographics within these states. These historical and ongoing challenges highlight the intricate and often contentious journey of Islam's engagement with modernity, underscoring a community's endeavor to reconcile deeply held religious values with the demands and opportunities of a rapidly changing world. Part 10: Understanding Fundamentalism, a Global Response to Modern Challenges. The term fundamentalism often invokes images of Islamic extremists, but this overlooks a critical truth. Fundamentalism is a phenomenon that spans all major religions and even some secular ideologies. Whether within communities of Hindus, Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Muslims, or followers of Confucianism, fundamentalist movements surface as a reaction to perceived threats from modern societal developments. At its core, fundamentalism is driven by a deep-seated disenchantment with aspects of modernity, particularly secularism, and the evolving roles of women in society. This sense of siege is not geographically confined, but can emerge wherever communities feel their traditional values are being eroded by modern secular values. For instance, one of the first notable fundamentalist movements sprouted in the United States during the 1920s, as Protestant groups rallied against the teaching of evolution in schools, viewing it as a symbol of encroaching secularism. These movements often idealize a return to a supposed golden age, yet a closer examination reveals that their agendas are not as traditional or conservative as they might claim. A poignant example is Sayyid Qutbi, a key figure in 20th century Islamic fundamentalism. Initially a proponent of Western values, Qutbi's experiences under the repressive secular government of Egypt led him to a radical change in viewpoint, advocating a separation between modernizers and true Muslims. He redefined the Quranic concept of jahiliya, or ignorance, which traditionally referred to the pre-Islamic era, to include contemporary Muslims who embraced modernization, thereby justifying extreme measures against them. This reinterpretation of Islamic teachings by Qutbah and his followers, which led to acts of violence against leaders like Egyptian President Anwar al-Sadat, underscored a significant departure from Quranic principles. Similarly, groups like the Taliban have adopted fundamentalist stances that contradict essential Quranic teachings, such as the prohibition of ethnic discrimination and the fair treatment of women. Ironically, it is the fundamentalists' insistence on returning to a past purified of un-Islamic elements that often leads them to violate the very essence of the Prophet Muhammad's teachings, which advocate peace, compassion, and inclusivity. This paradox highlights the complex interplay between the desire to preserve traditional values and the challenges posed by adapting to a rapidly changing world. Final summary. The essence of Islam's teachings emphasizes a critical integration of faith and political action, setting it apart from many other religions that often separate spiritual transcendence from worldly affairs. Central to Islamic thought is the pursuit of a just society here on earth, shaped profoundly by the life and teachings of Prophet Muhammad. This foundational ideal has faced numerous challenges, especially in the context of historical upheavals and modern changes. As the Islamic world encountered the forces of European colonialism, it thrust Muslim societies into a period of deep reflection and questioning. The core belief that a society in harmony with God's will would naturally prosper was shaken. In response, Muslims across the world have since grappled with integrating their rich heritage with contemporary realities dominated by concepts of nationalism and secularism, all while navigating the complex legacies left by colonial rule. This journey reflects an ongoing struggle to align deeply held spiritual and moral principles with the ever-evolving landscape of modern political and social life, indicating not just a theological or cultural inquiry, but a broader quest for relevance and adaptability in a rapidly changing world. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.